Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctico.
And I'm Donna Priskintas.
We gather here once a week around our kitchen table to talk about food, farming advice, recipes, and opinions. And we are here at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in downtown Ames, Iowa, and center of Iowa, center of the country, the center of it all. Yes, it is. We're glad to be part of community radio. It's a pretty amazing thing. Well, Donna, it's not the heat, it's the humidity. Remember that?
Apparently. Apparently.
We had a bit of summer here, and actually, we had a bit of a power outage here at the radio station just before the show started, I think.
But it was short.
It was short, yeah. But dramatic, because when a whole radio station goes out, it's kind of quiet, and all the little knobbies and the lights aren't working.
Yeah, everybody's air conditioners went.
Oh, and that too, But things are back, and we actually have a good guest with us today, and we have a good topic, too. It seems to be a good year for beans in the kitchen garden. I grow green beans, and I grow a few beans that go up on a trellis and use those for green beans for a while, but then I let them get all overly mature, and they give me soup beans and dry beans, and we're going to be talking about all things beans and legumish today. There's all the common beans you normally think of, and especially the summer garden beans, but then there's peas and soybeans, lentils, chickpeas, peanuts, alfalfa. All of this stuff is related, and we have someone in the studio today that will help us learn more about this wonderful family of foodstuffs. Joining us today at the kitchen's table is Stephen Cannon. Welcome.
Happy to join you and talk about beans.
Good. Stephen is a agriculture research service person that works for the USDA and an adjunct assistant professor in the ISU Agronomy Department, and he manages data for legume crops, and he has a wide range of things to talk about besides being a excellent gardener. Stephen has one of those gardens it's an urban garden in downtown Ames. It's one of those that you drive by and you kind of slow down and look over the fence. There's always something going on good in Stephen's garden. So welcome, Stephen. Tell us more about yourself. What do you do and why beans?
Okay, you're not a bean counter. Although you probably have to count beans.
Sure, I count beans for research. So the day job, as you said, I do genetics research. There are a lot of plant breeders working on all of these different crops, and they're working on things like disease resistance and different market categories for everything from chickpea to common beans to soybeans and peanuts and so on. And outside my day job, I pretty much do the same thing. We love gardening and love eating what we grow. And many of those things are these legume crops.
The rumor is that you're quite a good cook.
Well, it's hard to do a bad job cooking, fresh vegetables. So, yeah.
Well put. So, it seems like the concept or the family of beans, define beans, legume. Are they all beans? Are they all legumes? What's some of the terminology?
So, great question. So, any plant falls within a family that we have ascribed and placed it into. So there are grasses and maples and so on. Legumes, that is a family. It originated, it had a common ancestor about 70 million years ago, and diversified into many, many different species. In fact, about 20,000 species. Most of those we don't eat, but that still leaves a lot that we do. Humans have domesticated about 50 different species of legumes.
Oh, my. And but they're not all called beans.
No. And some of that is just sort of human convention. But things like peas, lentils, chickpeas, fava beans, those all fall within a botanical corner or subgroup. Not all of those are technically beans. I mean, even though we apply a name to fava bean. The beans, at least botanically, is another group that has the cowpeas, soybean, common bean, and some less common things like bambara groundnut, for example.
So then what's a pulse? Is the lentil family?
Pulses are generally dry legumes that we eat, and that's distinguished from oil seeds like peanut and soybean.
Oh, because they have lower oil content, right?
Yeah.
You have a lot to keep track of, my goodness. So you say you gather data. There's that wonderful term, bioinformatics. Now, that is huge. That's something you gather for crop domestication improvement.
That's sort of a 2 or 3 bit word.
Yeah.
But it means managing and analyzing data. And why would we do that? And why analyze all of the for all of these different species together? Well, it's because they do have a common ancestor. So if you find a gene that's important for one of the species, it's likely there's a corresponding gene in another species. To make it more concrete, there's a researcher on campus, Arti Singh, who's working to make mung bean a good Iowa crop.
Oh. Hmm.
Well, mung bean originated in Southeast Asia, so it doesn't naturally grow here. What's required to make it grow here, among other things, is you want it to flower early. Well, the genes that control the early flowering in mung bean, they correspond to similar genes in soybean or common bean or whatever.
Ha! One thing about these legumes, I try to read up a little bit on this. They have a symbiosis with the soil. There's this nitrogen thing going on. Can you talk about that?
Sure. So one reason that beans are so important in most agricultural systems is that they're high protein. And the reason they're high protein is that these plants have access to a lot of nitrogen. Why do they have access to a lot of nitrogen? Because they do have this special partnership with bacteria that live in the soil. So in fact, these legumes make a special structure attached to the roots, and these particular kinds of soil bacteria basically move into those plant structures, and there together, the plant plus the bacteria converts atmospheric nitrogen into a form of nitrogen that the plants can use that they eventually turn into the seeds that we eat.
Which makes them a very important food crop, not just for us, but for lots of different things. I always kind of like to, I'm not a researcher or a geneticist, but just being a gardener, you can see how some plants are sort of related to others. And trees, I've heard some trees have legume nitrogen fixing capabilities. And in my experience in Iowa, the trees, well, one kind of tree that does that, I think, is a honey locust.
Almost. So this is where common names sort of trip us up. There's honey locust and black locust.
Yeah.
The black locust has fragrant white flowers in the spring. And black locust fixes nitrogen. Honey locust probably doesn't. They both grow in similar areas. They're both legumes, though.
And they both have eventually pod sort of things.
Very much. And that's really the single thing that holds all of the plants together in terms of recognizing them, is that every legume will have this characteristic pod.
A pod.
And the seeds.
And there's something called, I don't know if it is native to Iowa, but there's the Kentucky coffee tree, which also is a pod sort of thing.
Yep, and that's yet another legume. It has a kind of a big fat pod with big black seeds. I'm not aware that it's actually used to make a drink, but
I often wondered why they were called that. I'm not that desperate. I'm not going to go out and
well,
drink.
In your breeding at the USDA, I suppose you're looking for traits for climate change adaptability because we are a big bean growing region, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Drought tolerance and disease resistance and things like seed size or color or and anything that people select and care about, that's what plant breeders work on.
Well, after we already asked you to be on the show, I noticed that there was a New York Times headline that said, "How to Make a Nation of Meat Eaters Crave the Humble Bean." And, of course, it was talking about the rich, rich, rich nutrition that is available in beans. And beans are environmentally much easier. I mean, they use less water. They use less all kinds of things in the environment that are becoming obviously very precious to produce a lot of nutrition for human beings. So they were just talking about if the government wanted to encourage bean use, if the U.S. government wants to get serious about encouraging people to eat beans, it should offer workshops and online videos and delicious, easy ways to cook them. So here we are. We're going to talk about delicious, easy ways to cook beans.
Well, not with my U.S. government hat on at all. I think we can do it surreptitiously through a community radio program.
Okay.
Just because beans are awesome to cook and eat.
That's a good
idea. They are.
But so the USDA, it seems like it'd be interested in food as being a nutritious thing. But soybeans, so the USDA is interested in more the animal food and industrial products? Or what are you looking at?
No, it's everything. Oh. Food, fuel, fiber. So whether it's for animal consumption or for direct human consumption, USDA very much cares about all of that.
Ah, very good. Very good. So, I say many years ago, we were discussing this a little bit before, soybeans. Soybeans never used to be a big deal, and all of a sudden, talk about making a market, making people try a new thing. We didn't used to have soybeans so much as part of crops in Iowa, or actually, people were eating soybeans here and there, but now soybeans
are a big thing.
Right,
we didn't start eating tofu in this country much until the 60s or something.
Yeah, so we can learn new things. So soybeans, I suppose soybeans have had all sorts of studies and all sorts of things, because that has turned into a commodity crop.
Well, yeah, but it's also, it originated as a wonderful, nutritious human crop in what's now China, Japan, the Koreas. And my wife Ethie and I had edamame for dinner last night that we grew. This morning I had soy milk that I made yesterday. With my ice cream, I like to have soy milk, not because it's healthy, but because...
Wait, soy milk ice cream or soy milk with
your ice cream? Well, I could have both. I like traditional vanilla ice cream, and I put soy milk on it. So,
you know,
it's just...
That's some bean devotion.
Tempeh is a nice sort of pungent... food with a very different texture and flavor.
Is it a fermented soybean?
Fermented soybean.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a, I think, a nice bacon substitute if you get the sort of a smoked tempeh.
Yeah. I was introduced to tempeh many, many years ago by a friend who always did things in a big way. Her name was Marie, and she said, well, you take these soybeans and you mush them, and you let them ferment for a while. And she mushed them by very much in the making wine sort of way. She put them in a big bowl or big pot and stomped on them with her feet. So I thought, well, so that's tempeh. I thought, oh, talk about what edamame is. I mean, we've heard that, and we probably find them in restaurants. Is that a special variety of soybean?
Yes and no. So if you had a friend who grew field soybeans in Iowa, and you went out to their farm and harvested some green pods and boiled those up and shelled them, those would be nearly indistinguishable from the edamame variety that you might order at a restaurant.
Unlike picking field corn.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But there are also special varieties that have been bred to be, you know, especially large or to maintain their green color and maturity and so on.
Ha!
Is that what you're growing in your garden?
I'm growing, I think, four different varieties that have been selected to be edamame varieties. Yeah.
So edamame is Japanese, right?
I think that's a Japanese word.
Yeah.
And so I know I've had them, but it's been a while. So are they cooked, processed in any way, or you just pick them and eat them?
So you pick them before they're fully dry and mature. You know, they're sort of filled out. You just pull the pods off and then toss those pods into a pot of boiling water until the pods have kind of softened a bit. Then strain them and run them under cool water, and then pop the pods out. You can either serve the beans in the pods on the plate. Sometimes restaurants will do that with a kind of a flaky salt, and just pop them in your mouth, or you can pop them out and, for example, we'll freeze them as little bags of edamame to have as a treat during the winter.
It's like eating a fresh shell bean, and any fresh shell bean.
Yeah,
basically.
But the texture is a little waxy, kind of like a fresh pea.
You can buy them in the frozen department, usually in grocery stores too.
Yeah.
Shelled, usually.
Yeah.
Speaking well, beans do tend to have shells. And speaking of eating good things, well, actually, this happens earlier in the summer, but peas, shell peas. There are a whole lot of variety of those, too. Flat ones and the English pea. It's been many, many years that I've grown peas that I have to shell. It seems a fuss, but they're so good. Do you have any words of wisdom on growing peas for people consumption?
Yeah, so I'll first mention the group of legumes that they fall within. Sometimes they're called the cool season legumes because they're typically planted in the spring or sometimes even in the winter to grow in the spring. So this would be lentils, chickpeas, peas of several types. There's a less known or less common thing that grown in Italy and North Africa, India, called grass pea or sisar chia.
So is a chickpea a pea?
Chickpea, well, it's in this group. You couldn't cross them. They're different species.
Oh, okay.
But you can grow chickpea and harvest them green, and they taste very much like garden peas.
Oh, really?
Okay, to directly to your question, Lana, peas.
Peas?
So they've been domesticated in several different directions. There's the shell pea or English pea that you have to shell with your thumbs and fingers and you eat the seeds. Or snow pea that's harvested more immature and eaten flat, pod and all. Or the sugar pod pea. And that one, likewise, is harvested immature in the pod. The whole pod is eaten. And for the sugar pod and snow pea, what really distinguishes those is they are less fibrous, so you can eat the pods.
Yes, much appreciated. There's this little stringy thing, and it happens in all kinds of, the beans I am familiar with in the garden. There's stringed beans, and actually it seems they've been, garden catalogs have been seeking the varieties that are the string in the bean, which is along the pod. There seem to be breeding that sort of thing out, strings.
Yeah, so the common bean, green bean, snap bean varieties that you'll buy nowadays, most of those have very minimal string or fiber. Mm-hmm. But if you go back to older varieties, I once grew one called Lazy Wife Greasy was the variety name. The idea behind that name, as I understand it, is excuse the name, I didn't come up with it. Lazy Wife, it lacks the string, so a wife in leisure wouldn't have to pull the string out.
Oh, the time you would save. It just
well, and that is the point of breeding the beans that you don't have to string, because it is tedious work. I mean, you think back like a few generations. I can remember my grandmother in her old age always sitting in her chair with a pan of some sort and a paring knife in her hand, because a lot of foods had to be stringed or pitted or, you know, and people don't want to do that anymore.
Oh, but I do. And there is a charm to it. I mean, I appreciate the
it's
things that we don't. But I brought some things into the the studio. Those of you not here can't see them, but some beautiful, beautiful lima beans of several different colors. Red, purple, kind of beige with purple streaks. And another species called Scarlet Runner Bean.
Oh, it's a beautiful, one of my favorites.
Sort of pink and purple mottled. And for both of these, they require a certain amount of labor. The lima beans, my partner and I in the evenings sit with a bucket of lima bean pods and pop the seeds out, and it's like I don't know, opening a presents.
It is. Actually, I've found doing those garden chores. I mean, we're not dealing with bushels of things here. It's enough for, you know, it's enough for your own use at home. Sitting down and watching TV, watching a PBS murder mystery or something, and having something on your lap and popping away at beans and peas. And, well, this has nothing to do with beans and peas, but lately I've been cleaning up ground cherries, which is another thing that needs to be husked. Scarlet runner beans are lovely because they have flowers. Also, one thing about peas and beans is they grow on runners. They grow quite tall, although some, and see, nothing is ever cut and dried. Some are bush beans and some are pole beans. Same thing, and they've been fussed with, or that?
Pretty much. Uh-huh. Just a matter of a small number of mutations that turns a pole, the sort of wild type pole variety, whether you're talking about peas or beans, into a bush. So we've seen naturally occurring mutants of these lima beans that grows as a bush.
Oh. So tell me about your experience. Like, for example, these scarlet runner beans, this is the pinkest one I've ever seen. It's absolutely gorgeous. This is the season of the year when you can have fresh pod beans, which is not something, you know, normally we get them dried. What do you, first of all, they must cook much more quickly, and they're a rarity because unless you grow your own, you're not even going to find them. Tell me about the taste and what you do with them when they're fresh.
Yeah, it really is a different culinary
Entity. And one that's hard to come by.
Yeah. Yep, best way to get it is to grow your own.
Practically the only way to get it.
Yeah, so beans that we'll treat that way. There are some varieties that are grown as shell beans. Those tend to be larger seeded. You can use these scarlet runner beans as shell beans. In fact, for breakfast, I had some scarlet runner beans, both the immature pods that you can just eat like a green bean.
Oh, you can eat them before they grow the big bulging bean.
Yeah. And then once they start to get close to maturity, you pop those big beans out and you can eat those as shell beans. Why go to the trouble? Because you do have to manually shell those. Well, it's a different texture. They're a little sweeter. They're not quite as starchy because the sugars in the seed haven't converted to starch.
Okay, now if you're growing these, aside from eating some tonight for dinner, if you want to save them for, you know, December, January, March, what do you do with them?
Well, you just harvest a pile of the dry pods, and then when you have time, when you're watching your murder mystery.
Leave them in the pods for storage.
Well, for a while.
Uh-huh.
But then for longer term storage, you want to pop the seeds out and then put them in, let them dry fully, and then put them into some
like
kind of...
Like spread out on a table or something. Yeah.
Let's talk, take a little station break here and come back and talk more with Stephen Cannon about beans in the garden, in the kitchen, and beans in our lives. Yes. To KHOI Community Radio. And Donna Lana Kitchen is tasty radio for the heart of Iowa. Yes, it is. We talk about food here, and today is Bean Day. Beans with Stephen Cannon. And I can tell, well, he's a gardener. He lights up when you ask garden questions, and beans are just such a lovely thing to talk about. We were talking about eating the stage of beans between just the pod and when they get into a dry bean. There's that wonderful in-between stage. Although, in my garden, I've been eating a lot of just plain green beans before they decide to turn into beans or to turn into beans in the middle of those pods. So just eating those green beans. I always like to grow not just green ones. There's a number of the varieties, but then there's yellow beans. I've always liked yellow beans, and I swear they can taste a little different than a green bean. Maybe it's
a wax bean?
Wax beans. I respond to that. Oh boy, it's yellow. Not that it's supposed to taste like lemon, but I like wax beans. There's a variety that I've been growing called pencil pod wax beans, and they've been kind of successful in my garden. Stephen, I've noticed. My beans, I've picked them early, and then we didn't have rain for a long time. The plants look like crap, and we got a nice rain, and they come back. These are bush beans. They seem to flower and come back many times.
Yeah, so with most of the legume crops, there are some varieties that are indeterminate that have that characteristic you're talking about. They'll mm-hmm. grow through the season. And some are determinate. So all of the soybeans that you see in commercial fields around here, all of those mature pretty much at one time towards the end of the season.
Right. So they can be
harvested. By a big machine. Right.
But see, for somebody like me who likes a bunch of fresh beans for supper, it's nice to go out there and find a surprise. You kind of go through there and you... Also, There's another variety, a pole bean this time, that actually you and Ethie suggested to me, and I've been growing them ever since. Ideal Market beans. They're a nice pole bean, so I would like to suggest the gardeners out there give those a try. Those are a fine green bean to start with, but, you know, you get kind of tired of picking them all the time, so there's a few that are hanging there that are going to be some good soup beans and good these in-between beans, the fresh matures. Yes, that variety called Ideal Market. Yes.
I want to come back to these Scarlet Runners because that actually is my favorite bean. From a culinary perspective, you know, in terms of trying to get people to eat more beans, I have found that the larger beans, of which the Scarlet Runner is a spectacular specimen, they're big, like thumb sized, makes it, like, for example, it's easy to mix it into a pasta or a pasta salad, or, you know, you don't have to have a whole plate of beans. You have some beans in the soup or in the pasta or in the rice or wherever. And that bumps up the nutrition. I mean, we all know from Diet for a Small Planet a million years ago, if you combine a bean and a grain, you get a very dense profile of appropriate amino acids for your protein consumption. So beans and grains are a good mix. The place I buy my beans, we were going to mention this, and it's full of bean information, is a company called Rancho Gordo, and their website has he sells all kinds of heirloom variety of beans from all over the world. And there's some, I buy my Scarlet Runner beans there because I don't grow them. And I also buy like these large white beans called Corona beans, which are another, and they're even bigger than the Scarlet Runner beans. So if you're looking to interest your family in eating more beans, kind of starting with the big dramatic ones is a good introduction. And so once you've dried your beans and it's in the middle of the winter or something, tell us how you cook them.
Well, there are a lot of different ways. I agree with you that these Scarlet Runner beans are really dramatic. You know, you find them in your pasta and you think, what is this? And you bite it in half and you look at it, it sort of retains its color. But, you know, there are a lot of different types that you might choose to use in slightly different dishes. So there's the big white beans. It's nice to cook those up and add, let's say, a colorful red pepper or tomato sauce, maybe some garlic, basil, whatever. And it's a contrast of colors. It sits nicely visually against the white.
And the big beans, you really notice that soft, almost sweetish texture of a bean when you have the big ones, because you get a full mouthful from one bean practically.
So I can't help saying it, but say something about the genetics. So the Scarlet Runner bean is one species called Phaseolus coccineus. And the common beans, the green bean or the shell bean, those are a different species, Phaseolus vulgaris. There are there's at least two other types of bean in that genus. There's Phaseolus lunatus, that's lima bean, and tepary bean.
Oh, tepary beans.
So there are four different species of beans. They don't cross with one another. And they were domesticated independently at least five times. The common bean in Central America and independently in South America. And I mention that in the context of the seed size, because the Central American beans tend to be the smaller, darker ones. And the larger seeded common beans tend to come from the South American domestication, the large white beans, the navy beans. Is that right? Yeah. So you don't need to know that to enjoy them, but it's kind of an additional...
Well, there's lots of stories about where these beans... Like, on the Rancho Gordo site, there's a little story about... And there are so many varieties. And beans do... You know, if you buy beans in the supermarket, a bag of beans, they might be a little old. So if they're... You just have to... If you have old beans, you have to cook them longer.
Exactly.
Whereas if you buy from... If you grow your own... You know exactly how old they are or aren't, and they don't have to be cooked as long. Buying from a site like Rancho Gordo, which has heirloom beans, they're called, because they have so many varieties. Their stock changes over quickly. In fact, on the site, you'll go to order something you want, and it'll say, out of stock, you know, and then you have to wait till it comes back in, which does tell you that they're turning their inventory very quickly, and it's... relatively fresh. I actually, when I buy from them, I keep them in the freezer. I don't know. Do you think that's necessary? But I do that with my heirloom grains and stuff too.
It's probably good practice unless you want to plant them. And in that case, it's probably the fridge or just a cool part of the basement mm-hmm. in an airtight container is better for seed storage. But yeah, fridge or freezer is fine for.
Well,
for
I don't get moths in my freezer, so yeah. I know they're safe down yeah, there.
There
but
you go.
yeah, so basic bean cooking. Almost all beans cook in boiling water. Now there's the question: some people, if your bean is a little older and you want it to cook faster, then you soak it. On the Rancho Gordo site, they suggest not soaking for more than 6 hours. I don't know. Sometimes I just throw them in at night, and when I wake up in the morning, I cook them. But the other thing that we need to remember is that the stock from boiling the beans is very nutritious and flavorful. So don't throw out that bean water. You can, you know, put it in the next soup or things like that. Also, Stephen, this is, tell me if this is an old wives' tale, but they always say never salt the beans till the end of the cooking.
I think there have been studies on it, and I think the answer is it doesn't matter.
Oh, really? So it does not make the skins tougher?
Not appreciably, no.
Huh, okay. There goes that one.
So this brings us to an important part here. We're going to be talking about maybe a recipe or two. It brings to mind the term a mess of beans. I've always liked that term, a mess of beans. But then, of course, there's the hill of beans, not knowing beans. There's bean counters and there's Jack and the Beanstalk. Beans are something about the shape and the connotation and the fact they've been so much part of human existence for so long. We have a connection to beans. Stephen, you said there really is a description for a mess of beans.
Well, I was curious about the term myself, so I looked it up. It's an old term going back to Latin and then Old French and then sort of Middle English, all the way back, sounding more or less like mess. And apparently the older meaning of the term is basically a portion.
Uh-huh.
So a mess of beans is a portion or a serving of beans and stuff.
Beans and stuff, because beans does go with stuff.
Yes, a lot of stuff.
Yeah, some place in our pile of stuff here. But so we have a bean recipe. I don't know where it went. Did you?
Well, I was just thinking of one of my favorite things, and I buy these from Rancho Gordo. They have a bean called the Marcella's bean, which comes from a bean that they found in Italy that Marcella Hazan really used to love. And so they bred it out and they're selling it. And it's a, you know, it's a cannellini of sorts. It's just a white bean, but it's really, really good. And that's probably the one I cook the most because it's really friendly. People really like them.
A friendly bean.
Well, they're creamy. They're beautiful. You can do all kinds of things with them. Like one of my favorite things is in the fall when you're harvesting your sage and, you know, make some brown buttered sage. You know, you take the leaves of the sage and you fry them up in the butter. You have already cooked the beans till they're really soft and creamy. And then you stir in the brown butter sage. Just white beans and sage goes really well together. And we are coming upon that season right away.
Yes. I'm going to remind folks that you're listening to KHOI. And you can find out more about this radio station at www.khoifm.org. And you can go to the Donna Luna Kitchen page there. We have archives. We have recipes. It's a fun thing to do. About beans with Stephen Cannon.
Well, beans are an old food staple and things people carried from, you know, as immigrants and all kinds of things. And of course, they are many kinds of beans are native to this continent. Stephen brought in a printout from tell us about this.
Well, this is from an ethnography, an interview with Buffalo Bird Woman. I think the interview was done in 1911. Buffalo Bird Woman was a woman in the Hadatsa tribe in what's now North Dakota. She was a wonderful, really astute observer and gardener. And so the whole book, which is really delightful, is her describing her gardening practices and also how they stored and cooked with their produce. She has a recipe called Four Vegetables Mixed. Sunflower meal was used in making a dish that we called Four Vegetables Mixed. Four things, or mixed or put together. We thought this to be our very best dish. To make this dish, enough for a family of five, I did as follows. I put a clay pot with water on the fire. Into the pot, I threw one double handful of beans. This was a fixed quantity. I put in just one double handful, whether the family to be served was large or small. For a larger quantity of beans in this dish was apt to make gas on one's stomach. When we dried squash in the fall, we strung the slices upon strings of twisted grass, each 7 Indian fathoms long. An Indian fathom is the distance between a woman's two hands outstretched on either side. From one of these 7-fathom strings, I cut a piece as long as from my elbow to the tip of my thumb. The ends of this severed piece I tied together, making a ring. And this I dropped into the pot with the beans. When the squash slices were well cooked, I lifted them out of the pot by the grass string into a wooden bowl. With a horn spoon, I chopped and mashed the cooked squash slices into a mass, which I now returned to the pot with the beans. The grass string I threw away. To the mess, I now added 4 or 5 double handfuls of mixed meal, of pounded parched sunflower seed, and pounded parched corn. The whole was boiled for a few minutes more and was ready for serving. I love the measures in her recipe. And it's also a reminder, I think, that virtually every crop we grow, and certainly the beans, were domesticated by traditional people in any part of the world, selecting the varieties that they liked and saving the seed till next year. That's certainly true of the beans domesticated in Central and South America, or peanuts in South America, or mung beans or soybeans in Asia, and so on. So they all go back to what you might call heirloom or land race varieties, mm-hmm. Things that people loved and cared for.
Very good. I love how she mentioned the digestibility of beans, and that probably isn't something. It's nice to know that that is something people have always been kind of concerned about, although the fact that our bodies are responding to what we eat is not a bad thing, but do you have any, is that something that one breeds in or out of a bean, or do people care about that, or what?
Compound that's responsible for that trait is a polysaccharide or a complex carbohydrate in the seed coat. And most legumes have some degree of that carbohydrate. There are some varieties that have less. For example, I've heard that yellow beans that you can buy in a Latino market tend to have
yellow-colored beans?
Yes.
So, for example, if you were to go on the Rancho Gordo website and you see all the pictures, if you pick the yellow beans, they would be less gas-producing?
I don't know. I know that...
We'll have to make an experiment here.
Yep, there you go. I mean, I know that some particular varieties of yellow beans are reported to have to be less gassy.
Yep.
That said, you know... we eat food, we have gas, it's okay.
It's true, that's what we do, that's how our bodies work. Also, there's other legumes. You gave me something a long time ago and I grew it. It was called a winged bean. Was that a bean too? What is that? It was a vine, I remember.
Yeah, that's yet another species, another genus, in fact. That one was domesticated probably in Papua New Guinea. It's very, very different appearing bean with four ridges down the sides. And you can eat that like a green bean, or you can eat the leaves, or you can eat the soft root in the fall.
Ha! Well, I remember it being very pretty because... Pretty is important in the garden. Yes, it is. Winged bean, very nice.
Well, so do you have any, I mean, from a culinary perspective, one of the main reasons people kind of go, oh, I can't eat beans is because they don't want to have flatulence. Do you have any tricks for reducing, I mean, I've heard all kinds of stories. Like one I've been told, and I do this in my beans, when I'm cooking a pot of beans, I throw in a big piece of seaweed, a kelp kind of seaweed. Apparently, that's supposed to help reduce the gas. I don't know. Do you have any tricks for that?
I don't. Honestly, I don't. I don't worry about it. I think one thing that if you have more in your diet, more beans in your diet, the body gets used to it.
Yeah.
But this is not at all unique to beans. I think it's sort of a bad reputation that it's got. There are some approaches. There's a product came out a couple of decades ago called Beano.
Beano, right.
And that's supposed to be an enzyme that breaks down some of that carbohydrate. Possibly the seaweed might have a similar effect. I've heard that epazote, an herb used
that's
in Mexican
right. It put
cooking,
that often in Mexican beans.
But again, I personally don't think about it.
That's true. I've grown epazote because of that. I thought, okay, that's easy. Epazote does take over itself, seeds, and you've got this plant all over the garden. Also, I found that although I do always grab some and dry a little jar of it and occasionally put it in with the beans, mm-hmm. I find it has a really, epazote, not the beans, has a really awful taste and smell. I think it tastes like dirty socks. So it's not like...
Yeah, but in Mexican cooking, when you cook with it, in a pot of beans, it works. The flavor works.
Yeah, the flavor works.
Yeah, you don't put epazote in your salad. You put it in your bean pot.
Keep that in mind, epazote.
You stick it in there with the Mexican oregano and all of those things, and they kind of all work out in the end.
Not a bad thing. Don't let the smell of the plant dissuade you. Ah, yes, things from the garden. Oh, anything else about legumes or your research you would like to share?
Well, just a few thoughts about cooking. I think it's hard to do a bad job with vegetables, at least if you keep it simple. So the runner beans that I had this morning, I boiled them up, drained them, added some olive oil, salt, and pepper, and Parmesan cheese, and some cherry tomatoes, and it was delicious. You know?
Sounds good to me.
Another herb that I like with green beans in particular is summer savory. It just seems to be a complimentary taste.
Mm-hmm. Which you are growing yourself, probably.
Well, sure. They grow alongside the beans.
No, the summer savory.
Yeah.
Not an easy herb to find also.
Yep.
It's a little like lovage.
You save the seed. Comes up the next year.
Yes, very good, very good. Well, I wonder, we had Stephen on the Don Juana Kitchen show like many, many moons ago, and we were talking about something that I believe is also part of this family of plants. You talked about something called Apios americana. What can you tell us about that?
So that's in the bean group. So it is a legume. It's native to Iowa and much of eastern half of North America. It was wild harvested by many Native American groups. In fact, early in Buffalo Bird Woman's garden, she describes Apios. I think she calls it ground bean, and it's actually part of their origin story, that it was brought from under the waters. So it's an important traditional food.
And it's quite like potato-like.
In this case, it's not the seed that you eat, but the underground tuber that is analogous to, anatomically, it is like a potato.
Mm-hmm.
And it's harvested and used like a potato.
Ah, wonderful. See, we're talking about a very broad, broad group of things called legumes. Good.
And they're very nutritious. I mean, there's a reason why the New York Times is saying that what would it take to make us a nation of bean eaters? And it starts out talking about, instead of all these fake meat things, just eat more beans if you want to reduce your meat content.
Beans, the magical fruit. We could probably come up with a song.
Now, that's going to be sticking in our head for the rest of the day. Thank you, Stephen. We've been talking to Stephen Cannon about bean research. He's with ISU and the USDA, and there's important things going on.
I am so impressed with these.
So thanks for being with us today, Stephen.
Beautiful good. Scarlet runner beans.
I want to mention there's some upcoming things. The KJOY book sale is coming up. That's Friday, September 6th, Saturday, September 7th, and Sunday, September 8th, right here at the studio. And if you have books to donate, you can just bring books and leave it on the porch. That's 622 Douglas Avenue. Or if you need help, come during during the day and give a call, 515-292-2878. So books to give, books to buy. Put that on your calendar, September 6th, 7th, 8th. Donna, tell folks about our broadcast.
Oh, well, the radio show that you have just listened to will be put into a podcast format and could be listened to on any place you listen to podcasts. Just put in Donna Lana, which is one word, D-O-N-N-A-L-O-N-N-A, kitchen, and there it will be.
Very good. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We come to you Tuesdays at noon. We repeat at 7 p.m. or any time at the KHOIFM.org website. You can stream, you can download, you can go to the Donna Lana Kitchen page and find out more than you ever wanted to know about us. Support this fine radio station. Music by the Barn Owl Band today. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
Excellent engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.